You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Grace Graupe-Pillard, an artist who works in several different bodies of work. Grace, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
So to begin with, I've known of your work for some time, but I became reacquainted with you and your work on Facebook, in fact, when I started seeing images that you were posting, which was of a photograph looked like a nude, which was, it is yourself interacting with often public art or sculpture. Can you tell us, just to begin with, a little bit more about that work? Because I saw it and I thought, what is this? Is she there? The first one I saw was Marina Abramović, and you know, when she was doing the sitting thing, and you're sitting across from her. And I was showing that to my wife, who, you know, we're both artists as well, but she said, you know, gosh, that's made so so well. But how are those made?
I'll tell you how they're made, and that series is called Grace Delving into Art, and I kind of wanted to really get involved, literally get involved through, and I really don't admit this too often, through Photoshop. A lot of people actually believe that I am traveling all over the world and getting entangled into sculptures and different art installations and events.
Well, that was my impression at first. I'm sorry to interrupt. That was my impression at first. And for those who are just listening to this as an audio, they're images of Grace entangled in different sculptures that you'd see in the Metropolitan Museum to all different museums. And it looks as though she's nude in the image and is taking a photograph of it. But in fact, it's very elegantly and technique-wise, in terms of Photoshop, it's seamless. It looks perfect.
Well, I really work hard on that, but the thing is, the great part of it, as well, is that I actually, when I put them on Facebook, I get these terrific responses. And one person had said to me, you know, art has always been, in quotes, off limits. And you're supposed to step back and not be involved and do not touch kind of philosophy of the museum and of galleries. And I really like the idea of going into these arts and actually becoming part of them and almost anthropomorphizing the sculpture themselves. And I do this all through Photoshop. So here I'm admitting it. But I give the illusion... and I like to, that I've been traveling all over the place. So lately I've been going to the Vatican Museum and the Louvre. In the beginning, they were all done in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And I had taken the pictures of sculptures. And I can tell you how I do this, if you really want the nitty-gritty. But
I do.
You do.
Tell us, because again, these are images of yourself. They're self-portraits. Right. It looks like self-portraits of you.
They are.
As a nude entwined in these sculptures. And it's often, it looks like it's actually happening like a performance. And
right. I actually like to kind of get in the middle of things. I'm also a voyeur. In a way, I'm also an artist, a painter, so I do want them to be elegant, and I'm also very interested in technique. What I do is I videotape myself nude, and I'm not a young woman, and that is part of what my work is all about. I'm a senior citizen. I'm actually older. I've been around for a long time, and I thought the older body is really looked at in a certain way. Quite often people will just say, oh, don't show me that kind of a body. It's repulsive or something. And I thought, and I'm kind of comfortable within my own skin. Not kind of, I am comfortable. And so I take videos of myself nude, and then I actually have folders on my computer of these videos. And then I take screenshots of different parts of the video. I will have hundreds and hundreds of shots of myself because I really can't jump around since I've had knee replacement. So what I do is I take these videos and I can just stop the video at a certain point, and there I have a screenshot of myself with my leg up in the air or whatever. And then I have
So there are a million positions. Sorry to interrupt, but so this video enables you to create all these positions, like a Weybridge kind of thing, and all these different positions, so that you can then extract them as data and place them in whatever context you like, almost.
Beautifully said. Exactly, if I could have said it that well. That's exactly what I do. And then, because I discovered when I was taking photographs of myself, I couldn't get the kind of movement and the gestures that I could get with the videos. And then I have another file of images of sculptures. And I, right now, I mean, I previously had concentrated on the streets of New York City and different areas, and they weren't involved with art. But later on, recently, with the last 6 months or so, I've just concentrated on large sculptures. And they, I decided, were almost all men, the rape of the Sabine women. They're kind of often gruesome images from Hellenic and Roman sculpture, which I then go in there as this heroine who will come in there and say, stop, stop. I will try to help. If there's somebody Hercules shooting an animal, I will put my arms up and try to stop the acts of violence. In some
right,
of
as a kind of mother courage type figure? I mean, is there something maternal about that or no?
Yes, there might be. There's something innocent, and there's something maternal. I've never had children, and there's something I've always kind of, in all my work, I see the world through the filter of the media, and even in early work, where at that time it was the camera, and it could be film, or now it's the computer. I just like to see the world kind of filter it through, and I'm always getting in the middle of things in a lot of the work. And they also have political, social, and feminist kind of.
Let's talk about body image and feminism and all that that's tapping into. The images that came to mind for me when I was in school, SUNY Purchase, I remember the Copeland's images of he was a man, right? They were huge kind of mural prints, close-ups of his nude body.
His hairy nude body,
and at the time, his son was actually in school, and I remember, it all seemed kind of a little embarrassing almost. That's how it seemed to like a 20-year-old,
Right.
And because it wasn't quite our issue, really. Of course, we see this is somebody's father's body, and but it was alien to also our visual vocabulary in a way. So how does, I guess, your work differ from Copeland's, for example? What are the different issues you think it raises? And also, I think, and maybe this is too many questions at once, but
that's okay.
You're someone who's essentially a painter who's been painting in the 70s,
right.
and now you're on Facebook and you're getting a reaction from that. I'd like to hear a little bit about how the community of Facebook interacts with the question that I just asked about Copeland's and you in the sense of body image and how that's received, I guess.
Well, the body, I'll just start with my very first paintings, large paintings that I had done and shown in New York, were of myself, nudes. They were about 7-8 feet, very direct, pretty photorealistic paintings of the female body and the male body and the older woman's body and a young child's body. And so I did this whole series, and this was at the same time when Joan Semmel was working and is still working, and wonderfully so, and Sylvia Slay and different artists. And we were interested in putting back into art history, which is an important point for me, the body that's not the idealized, beautiful, so-called rubber, or I don't know what the word is, stamp of approval.
Idealized version of a body, whatever that is, the pop culture.
Right, the pop
version.
Culture idea. So that's how it began for me, and in my 30s, and I started, my late 20s, I started to do these large paintings. And I've always been interested in the nude, and the strange thing is that it's almost like I have a dissociative kind of personality, because when you meet me, I am just the most, I'm the opposite of all these nude photographs in, that's my face, but I will wear high turtleneck sweaters, a million sweaters. I am not like the image. That's my work. That's my art. So I never feel embarrassed, or like you were saying about being embarrassed as a young student about the Copelands. I hope, but I'm sure that some young people would be embarrassed to see an older woman's body in these different
Well, so let's talk about feminism and how that does contribute to the dialogue. What is happening in a way? I mean, it's you're talking about art as being something truly political, right? Kind of transcendent. It's not just decorative.
Right.
It isn't art. It's something that can actually change the way people actually think about themselves. So how is that dialogue happening? And maybe Facebook comes into mind there. Do you see change or dialogue actually happening because of that work or other work that's related to it?
Well, this work has gotten the best response. I mean, it was amazing, the response that I've gotten on Facebook, because it's an interaction with the Facebook community, which I find really amusing, revelatory. I've learned a lot about my own work by the way people responded to the work. There's a humor, but there's a pathos. I've gotten some really wonderful, responses that teach me about the work. I mean, some of them are about mortality, and a lot of them are, again, about how women are looked at in society and how they have been looked at. And I feel that that's a very important issue for me and for my work. Now, I don't know if I'm answering that.
Well, you are. The paintings, you were saying, in contrast to the paintings, in other words, you said you've gotten a lot of reaction from these images,
right?
More so than the paintings that you posted on Facebook. And so what is happening then? You said it's interacting with the community, but so what are you hearing from the community that startles you or seems like a fresh dialogue or is a little bit about? Because that is what's happening today. It is everyone's contributing to Facebook, right?
Well, I took to the computer. Like, it's amazing. I mean, I just love technology, and so before I used to do all my work in the dark room, and I would collage pieces together and do a little bit of what I try to do in Photoshop. And Photoshop kind of freed me up, and I learned that in 1995. I learned how to use Photoshop, and so the community and I went on Facebook, and around very early, actually, I've been on Facebook a long time. And what is different about this series are the comments, are the amount of comments, and the kind of some people just think they're fun, but I think a lot of people who are in my art community can really see beyond the zaniness, as somebody had said, of the work. They can see that it has to do with a lot with political issues, and I'm still working on this series. So they are, it's not done. I've just been in the Roman Hellenistic time. The Marina Abramović piece was funny because she was so silently sitting at the Museum of Modern Art, having a non-dialogue, as I call it, with different people coming up and sitting opposite her. And in my one piece, I take a chair, nude, legs akimbo, with a censored black rectangle, which I put on for Facebook, these photographs won't be tossed off. And I'm sitting there with my eyes closed up in the air, and it's a kind of, I don't know, a comment. It just made me, it was something about that actual interaction that Marina Abramović had with the person who was sitting opposite her, who happened to be, I did not know, one of my Facebook friends, the image I used. And so she tagged herself. And that I said, why are you tagging yourself? And she said, well, I'm the person that is in this picture.
Amazing.
Which was a shock to me. It was
so that print. So that print exists separately, uncensored?
Yes.
As a work of art?
Yes. Yes, they're all
okay.
on my website.
Now, just to step back a little bit. So you have, as I understand it, generally, you know, a painting career. And
yes.
I presume that's what's in the marketplace more than these. You have a gallery
right.
that represents you in Chicago, Carl Hammer. Are these photographs
yes.
also sold or represented? Yeah.
No, not yet. No one. They were shown at the Edition Art Book Fair recently through Judith Salatkin's solo impression. She's a printer, and she's done a portfolio of 10 of earlier works. The series that's called I Can Still Dance, which is those are the pieces of also my nude body, but in on the New Jersey Turnpike, or in the middle I'm just trying to think of all the different places that I placed myself in on a subway stop, and those were shown at the EAB fair in New York just recently. But otherwise, I've not printed these out yet. The paintings are shown with Carl Hammer Gallery, and those deal with issues of they're very different. They deal with issues of the outsider, the refugee, and the people who are the collateral damage of war. And that comes out of my family's immigrant experience.
Okay, so let's go back to that a little bit. Let's jump to that a little bit now, because that's a kind of a snapshot of what you're doing now as I see it. There's the paintings,
mm-hmm.
but also what I know you from, these photographic montages.
Mm-hmm.
How did your art career begin, and can you tell us a little bit about, I guess, your parents' influence on your first beginnings in art?
Well, I'm a child of German-Jewish refugees from Nazi Germany, so all my life, and 70 members of my family were killed in concentration camps, including my paternal grandparents. And so my childhood, I was brought up in New York City and Washington Heights, I would hear about my father's guilt about not being able to help and get his parents out of Germany. He was never able to get the papers. And I did a series on that called Nowhere to Go, and he helped me with that. But that kind of influenced my entire childhood. I went to music and art high school, didn't really like that. When I went off to City College of New York and studied history and political science, because I wanted to be revolutionary. I wanted to change the world. I wanted to help people.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So
immigrant
that's City University, and that's in kind of a golden age of City University. That was
that's
a great
right.
school
right.
then.
It was a great school.
And you're studying political science.
And history,
is that what
right?
you're studying there? In history, not
yep.
art.
Not art. Nope, I decided I didn't want to do art. I
and
wanted
so
to change the world, really go out there. It was the 60s. It was the time when there was a lot of change in the culture. And that always influences my work as well. And that was very, very important for me until I actually faced the reality of going on marches and realizing that I really couldn't handle it. So I went back to art school and went to the Art Students League and just drew for 4 years straight and got a
scholarship. And that was after undergraduate school.
After undergraduate school. I actually got I was going to study Russian area studies. I went to graduate school for Russian area studies and got an assistantship. And then I thought, no, Grace, I wasn't comfortable. It just wasn't really Grace. It wasn't
right.
me. It was, it didn't feel right. And so I was doing murals on my wall in my apartment in New York with magic markers, and a friend said, why don't you study drawing? And I just went to the Art Students League and drew and got a scholarship from Philip Guston, who was the juror at the time, so I could draw, and I drew for about 4 years. Basically, just drew. And that's where I am almost an outsider artist in a funny way, having been
okay,
taught
so you
by
drew
running.
For those 4 years in New York. You were
right.
obviously making a living doing something else then. Were you teaching then, or?
I was married then, and I was married to my first husband then, and I was not teaching then. I had gotten the assistantship at City University, but then I left that, and then he was supporting me at the time. So this was for 4 years, and then I finally got jobs.
And how did that happen? You got jobs doing what?
I began to teach, And I teach, this is also not part of the usual route. I teach, since 1975, I've been teaching at the Parks Department in New Jersey, in Monmouth County. And it's my own little painting workshop. And I teach every Tuesday over 100 people, mainly adults, well, only adults, really, but at all levels, absolutely all levels of art awareness, of skill, which I kind of love.
And did you just start that yourself? That was a position that was open? I've never heard of that
position. That was a position.
Before.
Yeah, well, it was teaching the Parks Department in my county in New Jersey, where I also live, and I also have a place in New York, they wanted someone to teach painting. And I became a teacher and built up a following. And I get people from Mason Gross University who are finished with school, who've come then and want to continue, want feedback, and they come to my class. But they'll be studying alongside somebody who wants to paint a clown. And I can help them do that. So there's something that's part of who I am. That kind
teaching.
Of...
A teacher or educator?
But teaching not at the university level. I teach one day a week. And I teach 14 hours that day. And then the rest, I made enough money to support my second husband and I for many, many, many years. And I'm able to do it because I live a kind of lifestyle that I can do this. And then, of course, I got into galleries.
So let's back up for a little bit. So then you started making you were drawing for 4 years, and then you were painting, and that's when you started doing the nudes, right?
I started doing the nudes, which got a lot, started getting attention. I started getting reviewed. So I got a review in Art News. Eleanor Hartney.
What was your first gallery show in that first review in? Do you remember?
That was... Yes, I do. It was called Razor Gallery, and it was a gallery in Soho. I think it was 454 West Broadway at the time. And actually, Robert Colescott showed there at the same time I did.
Wow.
And we would be back-to-back shows. Judy Pfaff had a show in the back. It was a co-op gallery, and it was an excellent little co-op gallery. So it would be Colescott and I. We had shows in 79. 77, 79, I think, we both had shows there. And Malcolm Forbes bought some paintings, and collectors could come by because it was a ground floor gallery. It was across the street from the old, where I...
But it was run by artists. It was a cooperative that was run by artists.
It was run by artists, but actually it had a director. His name was Bill Hart, who was, this is so complicated, who was very good friends with Sam Shepard, the playwright. And so Patti Smith... had shown there too. So it was this funny group of people I got involved with. And I got reviewed. And from there, I eventually got into the Drawing Center and was in one of their selection shows. And that's very, very important. Was very important for me because the Drawing Center is really a terrific place to show. To come in there, it was clean. You didn't have to know anyone. And when I say clean, it wasn't based on influence. It was based basically on a committee and the work.
Right.
And it was actually kind of wonderful. And that gave me a big boost, which put me into another gallery, Bernice Steinbaum Gallery, which then went to Hal Brahm Gallery, who was wonderful. And I was with Hal Brahm through the East Village days for about... from 1984 to 1990, till his director died of AIDS. So it was, and then there were other galleries, Donahue Sosinski, which is now called the Proposition Gallery, and they're in the East Village now. So one thing catapulted into another, and then I got involved in public art, so that really helped me make a living in a lot of ways.
And how did that make you a living? You mean because you were... getting commissions, or what was happening with
public art? What happened is that I was asked to be on the master plan for putting art into the entire light rail system in New Jersey, which went from Weehawken, New Jersey, all the way up to, Weehawken, all the way from Bayonne to Weehawken, New Jersey, which is the tip of New Jersey, one tip to the other. And an artist by the name of Fred Wilson, whom most probably you know, was on that committee with me and many other artists. Larry Kirkland, who was a public artist, and I was chosen. And I knew nothing, absolutely nothing, but a man by the name of Tom Moran, who was head of the New Jersey Arts Council and public art in New Jersey, just thought he knew that I'm a hard worker and that I'd be willing to learn. And it was a great experience. I did this for a year, where we actually planned opportunities for artists. And I had a couple of stations that I could plan. I had to actually mock up the budgets and et cetera. There was a lot of real grit work, but I created a lot of opportunities for artists to make art at different stations. One of them is Deborah Brown, who now runs a gallery. I planned the artwork for one of the stations in Jersey City. And so that was a wonderful period.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
amazing, I know. That was such an opportunity because I knew nothing. I mean, they talked about grade levels and on the train, and all I knew about grade was like A, B, C, D. Grade
right.
was a grade. So that was really, I learned so much. I didn't know what contractors were, subcontractors. I learned the nuts and bolts of public art. And then I got stations. So my work is at Hoboken, Second Avenue Station. My work is at many different stations. I actually got some projects.
Your own work, I mean, was at the stations
as
well.
Right, right. That was part of it as well, that we would be able to get our own work in a station. And then I have also applied and gotten commissions. So this whole thing, one thing leads to another. And my work has always been about people who were the work that you might know from the 80s, or they were cut out pastel drawings of people who were kind of not integrated into Reagan society then. So they were homeless. There's a big homeless problem, and there's still, and cross-dressing, transgender. There are all kinds of people that I was very interested in highlighting and being made seen again, or being, I wanted them to be seen.
What do you think the importance is of the writing? I mean, those are very passionate issues and very specific issues. Were people aware of those in your work, or was it because you wrote or talked about that? Do you think that conversation was created?
It was reviewed. I had had many reviews, and actually that was a wonderful time. I think of art as coming in waves. And so that was kind of a high point of a wave. If I were a surfer, then they go back down again. But I did get reviewed in many different magazines. I had photos. I had a particular critic, Robert Mahoney, had written about me, Jude Schwendenbein, Eleanor Hartney. They're just different people wrote about the work, and the New York Times would review it. So.
But did they understand the issues that you were after? Did they read the work correctly?
I think Michael Brinson did, if you remember him. He was a wonderful critic for the New York Times. He really he wrote one of the while I'm talking to you, I'm trying to find it. But he really understood my work better than anyone. Grace Glick, who used to write for the Times, wrote the first review of my work.
Right.
When I had it at Hal Brahm Gallery. They were installations of these cutout pieces of people that just filled the walls with these cutout images, which were each about 6 feet. And there would be a very big head, and there would be a very small head next to it. And it was almost like you'd look at them and maybe like you're looking at people in the street. When you focus on someone, they kind of get larger, you know, psychologically. And so I would have pieces like that. And then I was in a show at PS1, curated by Jeffrey Deitch, on the portrait. And my work was compared a lot, which to John Ahern, but mine were flat, and they were drawing, and mine were about scale more so. But I love his work. But his are cast pieces. So they were very different. And that kind of could be upsetting at times, because someone would come in and say, oh, John Ahern flat, when they saw my work. And it was really very different, because they were about drawing, too. So, I mean, I had a very complicated, and that kind of work is in my public art. So I have my public art is put into neighborhoods quite often that are very, very, very diverse neighborhoods. And that's where my work is seen. And I think hopefully the community is responsive to the work. And this is in the public art. And they were all...
Right, and that's a very strong interaction with the community. I mean, which is not unlike, I mean, getting it kind of full circle, the interaction with Facebook now. That's also public art in a sense, isn't it? You're getting
is.
So much dialogue.
Good
yeah.
point. That is so true. And it's the same idea where I'm getting, and it's not in a museum or a gallery setting. It's out there because I'm pretty open about allowing most people, I friend a lot, I accept a lot of friends, so I don't, I like to be accessible. I like the work, I should say, I like the work to be accessible. And I think that's a very good point, because that is very public.
And what is happening on Facebook now, do you think? Do you think it's an important place for artists to be or to share work? What do you think the role of Facebook is in the arts, I guess, through your lens?
I think it's terrific. I mean, I think it is terrific now because there is a real artist community on Facebook, I feel. I mean, now that Jerry Salas, of course, has come and is the...
the grand dame of...
I was going to say the leader of the pack, but he has come. These people come on Facebook, and then other people join them. And it's a way to not only network, but to give your opinion, to have arguments, but at the same time to have an argument that's a good... those are good discussions. I should say arguments, discussions. I think it's a great place for interaction because you can be living anywhere. And, you know, you don't have to be in New York City and see, you know, and it's an advantage that I can go see a lot of these shows in the city, but I can see shows other places and support other artists, and they're supportive of me. I think it's terrific. I have had, I think it's gotten, people have left and gone to Google Chrome, Google Plus, and I went there too, but there's absolutely not the same kind of community. And people have gone, they've left, and then come back to Facebook. I mean, these are artists who I respect what they write and what they say. And they make me open my eyes, and I go, oh, yeah, I hadn't even thought of that.
And are those new friends, or that's part of the community that you kind of brought with you?
These are people who I didn't even know might have been aware of my work from years ago, and now all of a sudden are seeing my work anew, or they're totally new friends. I mean, I get responses from people from Latvia and Estonia and from Italy and from... I mean, I never had that kind of a reach with the work. And I think this really allows for that to happen.
Did it take a while for that to happen for you?
Yes.
Right, you've learned to write, right, on there. And so let's talk about that. Just to kind of wrap things up, a little bit about how that evolved for you on Facebook, because it didn't instantly happen on Facebook. You're writing, you learned how to write,
right.
So maybe talk a little bit about that process of learning how to write and how that Facebook community, so to speak, built, because that's very interesting.
Well, I think I felt challenged to I have a lot of opinions, and I also got very upset with the Iraq War and the onset to the war. And I went on Facebook at around pretty early on. So it might have been 2005 while the war was going on. And I wanted to express myself. And I always had a fear of writing and didn't think I could write. But I really feel that the more I do, the more I write, the more I think about things, the more I kind of organize my thoughts, I'm able to communicate much more coherently than I used to. And I really attribute that to that community of artists and not only artists, but community of people and not only artists, I should say that as well, but the Facebook community. Now, at this point in time, I value what they have to say. It was not like that in the very beginning because a lot of people were not on Facebook and they didn't know how to do it. a lot of people are computer at that point in the early 2000s. Or so, they were computer illiterate. They didn't know how. They were afraid of the technology. But I think it's more and more, it's easier for them to, you know,
absolutely, to get involved. And by writing, you're talking about comments back and forth, dialogue
comments,
in terms of comment
yes.
threads?
Or not only the comment, but your status, the thread, the status. And I also like the notes. Not many people do notes anymore because the status used to be limited, like Twitter. And they were limited, but not as short as Twitter. But now they're not limited as much. And, of course, I started doing videos. And so that's a big part of another learning experience. And I put those on Facebook as well, or links to the videos. And I do videos of artist shows that I see that I really, really think should be seen by others who won't be able to physically view them, the work. And so that's another thread, to use a Facebook term. So there are all these kind of skeins or threads that link this kind of global community. It's really a global, I don't want to use the word community again, but.
So we'll put a link to that too, also in this podcast. But how also did the movie reviews begin? Because you're writing movie reviews now, and that also,
right.
of course, ties in like the triangle, the blog. But they're beautifully
right.
written reviews. And how does that contribute to your practice happening?
I started to write. I also wrote, I'm thinking of doing art reviews, but I really, it's taking away from the painting. But that's what I started to do on Facebook. I would see a show that I really loved or a movie that I really loved, and I would write a review, a short review. And I would argue with somebody who had a different point of view, particularly in movies. I go to 2 movies a week. I have to go to the movies every Saturday and Sunday, almost every Saturday and Sunday. I'll see anything. I just love to get out and go to a movie. And about a friend, a childhood friend, wrote to me. She said, Grace, I've been looking for those old reviews of yours. I can't find them. She said, I think you should do a blog. And so I started just the movie blog, and I put them all together. And now I feel much more comfortable writing them. I used to dread writing and I just
Well, because you're getting better by the sheer number of reviews you've written.
Yes.
They're just getting better.
Yes.
You're writing, you're
getting
practicing
better. I wrote one last night on a movie I saw yesterday, and I just picture, it's almost a painterly kind of thing. I picture what I saw and how I felt, and then all of a sudden I just start to write. And this has never happened for me before, so that is terrific for me. I mean, it makes
and then,
me
and that's
feel...
really like an intrinsic joy there's no commercial result of any kind
in
those, is there?
Actually, in almost everything I've ever done, none at this point, no great, except for the public art, never great commercial. It's not about that for me. It's about, you know, the process of making these things and writing, actually, as well. And it would be great if people see the work or see things, but I will see. Time will tell. That's all I can say.
Well, Grace, it's great talking to you about all this. I think before we close, there's listeners that aren't just students, but artists of all different from all different walks of life. Is there something that you would say to artists, or that you want to close with, or any thoughts on how artists kind of make their way in the world, in a sense, and what are things to remember, if that's not too cliche, but it's something that I think people are still thinking about.
Well, I speak to students I have a cynicism about the art world as well, about the art market and the gallery system. I think it can be very difficult, but I think it's the best. I really mean this. It's the best if you are able to, and you have the intelligence, the ambition, because talent for me is a small part of it. That's only facility. That if you can do this for yourself, it's the best thing you could possibly do for yourself. But then how do you make a living? And I've done it through teaching, and I've been very lucky through public art and teaching this one day a week. And that is the challenge for someone but it's definitely worth it. It's the only time my blood pressure's down, when I'm not hyper, when I'm focused, and I'm really, really feel very, very lucky to be able to do and to learn something new all the time. And the other thing is to make your work and not to be afraid to let it lead you where it's going to take you and not let the market stop you, because then otherwise it'll become slick and it'll become formulaic. And I think that's really important. And you develop your eye and you'll know. And if you can be honest with yourself, I have to be honest with all my students, no matter what their level is. And if I can be honest with them, I realize, I say this to myself all the time, I have to be as honest with myself and my own work and realize that if I'm doing something that's tricky or that doesn't feel true to the work itself, I have to make the changes. And that's really, I just wish there was a way. I've gotten grants, which are very lucky. So that's another way. I had an NEA and New Jersey State Council grants. And, I mean, I encourage people to apply and to get their work out there, to be seen. And maybe Facebook is a place where at least people can see what you're doing and comment on it. And you never know what will happen, like me talking to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.